You're now listening to Her Story, Women Who Lead, with your host, Sandra Bieber. This is a dynamic and inspiring podcast that really dives into the rich tapestry of women's history, explores critical topics in women's health, and celebrates the profound impact women have on our communities. Stay with us. This episode of Her Story is supported by Evans Wealth Strategies, providing customized services for discerning clients since 2008. All right. Welcome to Her Story, Women Who Lead. I am so excited that I'm here with Mary Clements Evans, who is just a rock star. I mean, just sitting with you here before we were taping, I'm so inspired. First of all, I feel like I could take over the world, which is amazing. I feel like I need to get my finances even more in order when after talking to you. And I really want to educate people on what that is. And I think there's no better person than you, that you wrote a book, Emotionally Invested. And it is, I mean, an Amazon number one bestseller. And the good news about this is that you're sharing it with not only the Lehigh Valley, but people all across the nation and all across the world. So welcome, Mary. Please tell us a little bit about yourself. And we're excited to have you here.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me here. It is such a privilege to be here, and I'm looking forward to the chat we're going to have.
Absolutely.
Well, a lot of people ask, you know, how did I get into this business? And I would love to tell you this was well thought out and well planned, but it was kind of a series of really happy accidents. Yeah. I had spent decades in corporate America, and the last company I worked for, which was Rodale, Rodale was failing. And so I was let go and all of my friends. And so I spent the first summer in my pool with my girlfriends drinking champagne. So that was the best summer I've had since I started working. It was time to get a job. Merrill Lynch contacted me. Mm-hmm. I interviewed with them, and two things I realized. Well, I'll never be a financial advisor, and I'll never work for Merrill Lynch. I was offered jobs across the country as a chief financial officer. My mom was dying of cancer, and I was her caretaker. Mm. So I wasn't going to move.
Yeah.
So I had to figure something out. Another firm came to me and asked me to be a financial advisor. And they said they were a much kinder, gentler firm. Mm-hmm. So I took the job there. I quickly realized they really were not kinder and gentler. And I didn't like it there. I thought everything was focused on selling products and not giving financial advice. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the financial advisor, not about the client. Mm-hmm. But I love the clients. I just really loved meeting, you know, with people and helping them and talking them through things. So I thought, okay, so I want to be a financial advisor. I don't know if I trust any firm, to be quite honest. Mm. And now I did my due diligence. You know, I'm out of the pool. The champagne bottle is empty.
All done now.
Okay, let's get serious. And so I decided to own my own firm and trade through a company that I think is one of the best companies in the country. But I thought, you know, if they do something that I think is untowards, I'm taking myself and my clients and we're going to go somewhere else. So I didn't have to to worry about it. And that's how it got started.
Amazing. And so how long have you been in business, Mary?
18 years now.
18 years as a financial advisor and finding that you love this work. Tell me a little bit about what makes this work. What makes you tick? Get up in the morning, every morning.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, nature makes me get up at 5 a.m. That's part of it. But, you know, I started my business 2 weeks before Lehman Brothers collapsed.
Wow.
So if you have a question on timing, I'm your girl. And it was a really difficult time. Even the company I traded through, they're like, oh, we're so sorry. But here's what I realized. Mm-hmm. And if your viewers are younger and they don't realize, 08 and 09 was a very huge
difficult
recession. At one point, the stock market was down 57%.
Wow.
Yeah. Unemployment was soaring. You know, prices were high. Mm-hmm. Foreclosures on houses were up and tons of layoffs. People were not able to find a job for like 2 years. People were terrified.
Yeah.
And what shocked me is that people were saying they don't hear from their advisor. Their advisor's not calling them back. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is our job. This is what we're here for. Mm-hmm. And I realized then it was so important to not just address the facts, but to address the fears.
Absolutely.
When people are going through these difficult times, you have to do both. I couldn't talk to everybody every week. So I developed a lot of seminars, you know, where we talked about what's really going on here, what's normal, what I thought was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Validate people's emotions, you know, realize that this is a scary time. And why so many people during that time period sold out of the market, I didn't have a single person sell out.
Wow.
Because we talked them through, we calmed them down, and I thought, ah, this is it. And out of everything I've done in my long career, yeah. I'm the happiest and proudest of that.
Absolutely.
And then I knew, this is it. This is for me. This is what I'm meant to do.
I'd love that. And a lot of the times when people are investing, it's whatever we're doing, many of the times it's emotional.
Oh,
what
yeah.
makes... So women are emotional beings. We are empathetic. We give. And we... typically are moved by emotions. What are some things or some, you know, fallacies that maybe you can dispel or give us some insight on how we can be that investor that's not, you know, putting it all on the line because we have a feeling or something like that? Tell us a little bit about what it means to be emotionally invested.
Well, really, when I talk about emotionally invested, the first key is that money's emotional.
Yeah.
Money is emotional to everyone.
Yes, that's true.
I tell my clients, I'm emotional about my money. Mm-hmm. Your money, I'm a stone-cold killer. But my money, you know, it's like, oh, my God, I don't think I should be spending that.
Yeah.
And I give a lot of talks at places and a lot of seminars. And there's a little sort of quiz that I do, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
I ask people to complete this sentence in one or more words. And that is, money is.
Yeah.
What comes to mind? What's the first word that you think of? Well, I've done this 100 times, I've even done it to groups of financial advisors. The answers I get is the root of all evil, scary, scarce, fun, safety. The best answer I ever got was not my friend. But the answer I did not get, it was the means of exchange for goods and services.
That's right.
So we have attached all these emotions to money that really don't belong there.
That's right.
And so that's what I'm trying to get people to realize, that it truly is the means of exchange for goods and services.
That's right.
And when you can get to that, you can back the emotions down a little bit and do it on a more, you know, logical, reasonable, goal-based, you know, basis.
I love that. And, you know, working in philanthropy for almost 15 years, my career has spanned in that. And I have such a high respect for those individuals that are good stewards of monies, right? Whether you're making $50,000, but you're, you know, being able to invest back into the community or give back to causes that you care about, you know, tell us a little bit about what inspires you when you see a donor or someone that has, you know, given so much and said, well, here I've amassed this wealth and I want to be able to give back in a way that it's thoughtful, intentional, and sometimes even extravagant when you look at it. So how do we get to that space? How do we get to be those major philanthropists?
I think one of the first things people need to realize, and I say this all the time, and I think sometimes it makes people uncomfortable, but money is power.
Mm-hmm.
You want the power in your hands, because when you have that money, you're not buying the island and doing despicable things.
Mm-hmm.
You are educating your children.
Yeah.
You are contributing to your community.
Yeah.
You're making this world a better place. So when you think money isn't important or you shouldn't pay attention to it, I don't want you to think about money is like dollars and cents. I want you to think about money as, I can make sure my kids get a good education. I can support my church.
Yes.
You know, I can do all these other things with it. That's what you're going after. You're not going after, you know, the scorecard where, you know, those who die with, you know, the most money, you know, wins. That's not what it's about. And I particularly think women do this better.
Oh.
Men will use money as a scorecard much more so than women.
Mm-hmm.
If women realize it's like, oh, you know, look at these poor kids that I want to help.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to earn more money or I have to spend less on things that don't really matter.
Yeah.
Because this is a bigger priority to me.
Certainly.
Giving to the food bank is more important than me buying a new car.
Sure.
And that's what a good financial advisor is going to help you figure out.
Mm-hmm.
What are your goals? What are your values. What are your priorities? Mm-hmm. And then when you rank them and you know that's what you're going after,
then you can set your goals and you can achieve them.
Yes, and it's so much fun when you get there.
Oh, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. Being able to set a goal and say, I want to get here in this amount of time. How do I do that? Is it reasonable, right? We talk about, what is reasonable and what's not reasonable. So some people say, oh, yeah, I'm going to negotiate my pay. But you come in with 2 years of experience and you want, a salary of someone that has 10 or 15 years of experience. So that's not reasonable. Right. But it's good that they think of themselves like that. I think that's important. But I think that reality comes into play for a lot of things. So I think what would you say to a younger person that's just starting out? Let's say they're, in maybe halfway through or 5 years into their career transition for out of college. Like what would you say to them? And then someone that's in their 30s or someone that's in their 40s or beyond, what would you say?
I think I have similar advice for everybody.
Yeah.
It's just implemented in different ways.
Yeah.
We have a society where we have taught people that you are supposed to understand alpha, beta, standard deviations, what's the Dow Jones, what's the NASDAQ, how does all this work, which is insane.
Yeah, that's a lot.
I couldn't do anybody else's job, right? Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
This is the financial system is so huge and so complex. Mm-hmm. I've been in finance for almost 50 years, yeah. I hate to say.
You started when you were five.
I did. Thank you so much. You nailed that, Sandra. I appreciate that. But I come across stuff every day that I'm like, what the heck is this? Mm-hmm. So it's really important to get the properly qualified expert to help you.
Certainly.
It's never too early to start a plan.
That's right.
A young person and they're 22, if you save money from the age 22 to 32, put an X amount away a year, versus if you started at 32 and do it to age 62, you're ahead of the game.
Yes.
For 10 years, starting early.
Absolutely.
Then waiting. And a financial advisor's going to start helping you figure out these goals. What is it going to take to retire? Yeah. And when you see what it's going to take, and then you start working on it, and you see progress, it's like you go to the gym, somebody helps you lift weights or,
absolutely.
Do whatever, and then you see progress, like, when I can put my carry-on luggage up on that shelf all by myself.
Yes. Feeling real good.
A guy comes up to need my help. No, I don't, but thank you. Boom. Score.
I love that. And you said something really important. You said when you think of your own money, you're very emotional. But for other people, it's like you're a stone cold killer. It's all good. It's the same thing. It's like surgeons. Like it's the same way. So a surgeon is not going to go and operate on themselves, right? Their family, right? They're going to operate because they know, they know their trade. They don't let their emotions or their nerves get in the way. And it's the same way about that. And I think that this podcast is all about inspiring women by bringing other women that are just superpowers, right, in some ways, and to raise their voice and speak up. We're taught, it's better if you just, quiet down a little bit.
Yeah.
It's better if you just, stay in that little corner. But for women like you and I or many other women, I don't have that luxury because something broke where I just can't. And you can't do it. For the good of our communities, though, I think it's important, it's valid that we raise our voice and have more women, young women, say you have a voice and you're using your God-given talent and your resources to, shore up those shortcomings. Like if you're not a financial advisor, you're not good with finance, just shore it up. Shore up your game. Find somebody, find a mentor, find someone that could help you so that you're able to do the things that you want to do. You'd like to give back to the food bank, but maybe prioritizing your car so you can get to your jobs to be able to get money so that you're able to, amass that wealth so that you're able to give back to the food bank in some major ways. And not finding yourself utilizing services in that way. I think our heart sometimes comes before the brain in that way. And that this is a generalization, but I really, from speaking to so many women, talking to women that have all of their ducks in a row, well, nobody ever has any, all their ducks in a row completely.
Correct.
They just look like they have their ducks in a row. But I think it's about leaning in on the wisdom of others. What is when you see successful people, especially, you know, young professionals, how is the relationship that inter-age, right? So, you know, folks that have maybe, you know, several decades in the workforce versus some that are just coming out of college. How are you seeing that pan out? And what are some takeaways that you would give to those individuals?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I think that in general, mm-hmm. people don't seek that mentor or that advice mm-hmm. because we live in a society that has spent a lot of time shaming people, blaming mm-hmm. people, and yelling at them. There's so many experts, particularly in the finance field, yeah. you know, that are on television and radio and saying horrible things, you yeah. know, to people. And I think if we can get, you know, young people, and I think young women are particularly, mm-hmm. you know, nervous about this, mm-hmm. that go up and ask that woman that you admire for help. You would be stunned.
Yeah.
She's not going to be upset with you. She's yeah. not going to judge you. Yeah. She's going to feel so good about herself yes. that you want her, you know, to help you.
Yeah.
Like, one of the scary things, like, in my business, what I found out, and I realized how a lot of these personalities have harmed. And, of course, women are always, they always feel bad about what size they are, how they look, you know. Yeah. When a new client would come into me, regardless of who they were, mm-hmm. how well educated, how age, within the first 5 minutes of meeting me, and I think I'm pretty, you know, yeah. I'm pretty approachable. Hey, what's going on? They are so worried about being judged and shamed and blamed for what they didn't know. So, as you might have figured out, I use humor for everything.
Yeah,
you know,
I love that.
It's the ticket, you know.
Yeah.
And I say, oh, you want me to judge you. Okay, well, if you want me to do that, I'm going to have to charge you more because I don't like doing it, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I see the temperature go down. I even had a new client recently, chief financial officer of a major company.
Yeah.
And one of the first things she said to me was, oh, I love the woman that answered your phone. I was so nervous to call you guys.
Yeah.
And she, you know, like, she called me down, and she was like, and I'm like, and you're a chief financial officer.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, a mature woman and are worried about that shame and blame. Just throw it out the window.
That's right.
Just go up and ask people, hey, can you help me?
Yeah.
And women are great at handing out help.
Absolutely. But not receiving it.
Right.
Yeah.
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 It's not, I always tell people, looking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's Absolutely. A sign of strength.
For sure.
Do you know about Warren Buffett and Bill Gates?
I you're going to tell me. I'm excited about this.
This is yeah. one of my stories. Warren Buffett, who I think, you know, I have this girl crush on him, even though he's 100
yeah.
years old, right?
Ditto,
you know, greatest yeah. investor ever.
Yeah.
Super, super smart guy. So he, long, long time ago, he meets Bill Gates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tech guy, which was new back then. You know, mm-hmm. didn't know a lot of tech guys. So Warren Buffett just starts asking him a question. Warren Buffett called him every night for almost a year to ask him questions about technology and computers and how all that would work.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the sign of a brilliant person.
Absolutely.
You have knowledge I don't.
Yeah.
Could you share that with me?
Absolutely. And he used it for his investments, right?
He
used
did.
It to build his investment core because, you know, whether it depends on 30 years ago or not, you know, technology wasn't as vast as it is now.
Yeah.
So he saw that foresight and was able to go in. That hunger for knowledge is so important. Being a know-it-all is so overrated. It's boring. You know, it really is boring.
It's the path to destruction, too.
It is.
Yeah.
Because no matter how high you climb, you could be the chief of it all, right? You've been a CEO, you've been a CFO, you've been a COO. But if you don't have that hunger for that inquisitive sense or that curiosity that keeps pinging at you, I feel like that stalls you and that keeps you stagnant. Like we were talking about, you know, the woes and the drama of an overachiever. Like sometimes you just want to sit down and eat a bag of chips and, you know, just sit down on your couch and not do anything, which I'm all for.
Yeah.
There are some weekends that are just that. But then there is that nagging sense of how can I do more? And how can I be better than I was yesterday? And what other gifts do I have to unearth to give back? So that's really been my journey. I see that also for you. You know, we're talking about financial advisors, and we're sitting here with the one of the best. And so tell us some things that we ask our financial advisors. Hey, like, how do we find our match, and how do we find someone to, you know, to help us with on this journey?
That is one of my favorite questions, because we have trouble in this industry. So most people don't realize FINRA, which is the federal regulatory arm of my industry.
Yeah.
If you go on their site, there are 253 financial designations, and they tell you what somebody has to do to get them. Mm-hmm. Two designations that are not there, financial advisor, financial planner. Mm-hmm. The two most searched designations there is. And why aren't those two there? Because there's no standard. So you can have a high school diploma and take a test and call yourself a financial advisor or financial planner. Wow. Or you can be someone like me that has a college degree, you know, and for my certifications, you need 3 years of experience. You take a master's level series to be a certified financial planner. So you have to find out what their education is, what their training is. Mm-hmm. Are they, who are they regulated by? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there continuing education? And if you are only regulated by the insurance industry, that is extraordinarily different than being regulated by the U.S. federal agencies. There is no national insurance thing, so that's regulated by state. Mm-hmm. And most of the states are more concerned about health insurance, so they're not paying too much attention to this.
Yeah.
So it's really different. You want to find out if this is somebody selling a product and getting a commission, mm-hmm. or if this is an advisor mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. wants to be part of every aspect of your financial life.
That's right.
Those are very, very different paths.
That's right.
If you want to buy an insurance product, sure. You just buy somebody and he gets a commission, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I think we all need... Like, I have a financial advisor. It's one of the other CFPs in my office.
Yeah, yeah. Needs a financial advisor. Just like doctors need doctors,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Wow.
Yeah. You've got it. So you need to know that. You know, and we do, I think we do things very differently, mm-hmm. you know, in our firm. So because people are nervous and they don't want to ask and they don't want to feel pressured, we actually provide three complimentary meetings.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So if you want to come into us, and I do that because it gives us an opportunity for you to see our value. Mm. Because the market goes up and down, it's scary. And if you're pressured into something, and then the market goes down, you're going, oh, I know I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
They pressured me into that.
Yeah.
You know? You want to feel good about your money. You don't want to feel uncomfortable. So if somebody's telling you need to do this today, because... Mm-hmm. When I get into this, people would say, oh, do I need to make a decision today? I'm like, mm-mm. No. Yeah. I'm like, if it's a good idea today, it's probably a good idea next week.
That's right.
You know? And it just really changed the way, you know, people thought about it. Everyone on my staff, which is very rare, is paid salary. Mm. I did that because if one of my financial planners goes to you and say, hey, Sandra, mm-hmm. you know, we really think you need to divest yourself of this and purchase this. I want you to know income isn't changing.
That's right.
They're telling you that because that's what's best for you.
That's right.
These are the things you've got to look for. You have to figure it out. In Emotionally Invested, I think it was the last chapter where it's really to the industry. Yeah. I'm like, come on, clean it up. You go to a doctor, you know what their education is.
That's right.
You have a teacher, you know what their education is. You go to a plumber, you know what their education is. Mm-hmm. You go to a financial advisor, you have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's wrong.
That's right.
And something everybody needs, something as important as money, and we haven't done anything to regulate this. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've regulated like me. You know, I've got all sorts of regulations out of the FINRA, but we haven't helped the clients figure this out.
Absolutely. And I think there's just mass understanding of the financial systems, especially, you know, for me, when I think about types of individuals that come into wealth or perhaps are building their wealth, I think of immigrants that, you know, come to this country to build a small, you know, business or to work on that, to navigate all of these complexities is difficult.
Yeah.
And how... You know, they climb up. It's just by asking and being able to support. But they also, you know, a lot of countries don't really have anything called Social Security, right? And they don't have 401ks. When you're, you know, in a different country and you're older, they rely on the system of the families, right? They live with, you know, their families. They live with their kids or their relatives. Versus here in America, where everything is kind of parceled out, whether they go to their home or they go, you know, live on their own in home care. So just the whole system is skewed. So it's like imperative that people know how to rely on themselves. And I think women especially, right? Yeah. We're taught, hey, don't worry about it. You know, just do your best and, you know, you can have somebody just fly under and you'll be okay. But that's not the case anymore, right? More women are becoming the breadwinners in their homes and, you know, going out and having to live and work and be able to support themselves.
Well, we have that. Mm-hmm. And so they need to understand the money and manage it. The one thing frightening me right now about women. Mm-hmm. So there's a trend right now for women not to have careers and to mm-hmm. stay at home. And I'm not against stay at home moms. So let me make this very clear. My mother was a stay at home mom.
Yeah.
And she was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that was terrific. But there's a huge financial penalty for this.
Yeah.
And women don't realize, of course, no one ever thinks when they get married that they're going to get divorced, you know, because everything's, you know, mm-hmm. oh, he's just the best thing ever, you know, and then 15 years later, not as good as he was. But so when you get divorced and, you know, the state of Pennsylvania is very typical, mm-hmm. you split the assets. So if you have accumulated retirement funds or a home, that's great. So you get half of that. But here, and there's some alimony, mm-hmm. and it's only in Pennsylvania, you get about 1 year of alimony for 3 years that you've been married. Mm-hmm. So let's say you've been married mm-hmm. 15 years. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, 5 years, right, of mm-hmm. alimony. Mm-hmm. Then nothing. But the biggest thing is he's worked on his career and you haven't. Yeah. He walks away with the ability to earn $250,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And you walk away with the ability to earn $15 an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm a certified divorce financial analyst as well. Mm-hmm. And I've coached so many people through this, and they said, well, I just want it to be even. I want us to have the same lifestyle. It's not going to happen.
That's right.
It's not going to happen.
That's right.
Like, well, that's not fair. I said, well, I agree with that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I can only tell you what's legal.
Yes.
And I think women need to realize this. Mm-hmm. They need to understand the financial peril that they may be putting themselves in. I think there should be some sort of like almost like a prenup agreement that this doesn't happen, you know, but mm-hmm. – it just drives me crazy because I see so many women suffer because of this
and
all
even,
the time.
Even without divorce, that there are, you know, women that are widowed, you know, at certain ages. And so it's like I always coach people to go after their gifting, go after their skill set. What is that? And unearth it. Like, I believe that God gave us all a gift, every single one of us.
I agree.
It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. He didn't just say, oh, bless all the men. He said women as well. And so I think it's important that each woman look inside themselves and say, how can I get better so I'm able to support? Now, this has been an incredible conversation. We are just rolling and rolling and rolling. And, you know, give us some final takeaways about what you would give to our viewers. And thank you for sharing your wisdom with us today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. And, you know, I wrote the book Emotionally Invested because I wanted to get the message out past just my practice. My practice, you know, is only so big. And I think one of the big things that it does is I want to change the conversation that we have about money.
That's good.
And if they can read the book and understand their money personality, maybe their spouse's money personality, mm-hmm. that's the first step, to be able to talk about it, to talk about it comfortably.
Yeah.
That's when you start to take control of it. You start to realize the power in it. So if I could do nothing else, if I could just get that change happening in this world, I would be over the moon.
Well, you are doing such good work, and we're so grateful that you came and you joined us and had this vital conversation to just inspire women and men across the entire globe. We have listeners from all over. So thank you so much for everything that you do and pouring into people and using your gifts to better. So thank you, Mary.
And thank you for what you do, Sandra.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
I appreciate you as well. This is Sandra Bieber, and you're listening to Her Story, Women Who Lead on WDIY 88.1 FM. This episode of Her Story is supported by Evans Wealth Strategies, providing customized services for discerning clients since 2008.